Krishna. So welcome back everybody. This is part 2 of our discussion on 3 shlokas of Bhagavad Gita chapter 1. And we discussed about Krishna being infallible and he very lovingly serves his devotee because of his quality of Bhakta Vatsal. And 2 instances where Arjun asked him to become his charioteer and Krishna readily agreed. And those of us who know the Mahabharata, Karna's foster father was a chariot driver, and for that reason he was not accepted as a Kshatriya and looked down upon. But Krishna doesn't have that kind of any issues when he becomes a chariot driver for Arjun. So he accepted that low position. In fact, at one point of time, when Arjuna was chasing Jarasandha, Arjuna's horses became tired and he made a hall of arrows, created a lake so the horses could drink. That time Krishna massaged the horses of Arjuna. He took out their arrows from their horses' body, dressed their wounds, massaging them. Why? Why so much of trouble for his devotee? And the answer is what we said. He takes more pleasure in serving his devotee than he does in being served. So friends, there is a small shortcut master key for getting Krishna Bhakti, and that is learn from this example that it is better to serve Krishna's servant than try to serve him directly. So now we are discussing, as Madan Sundar Prabhu is saying, from our Acharya Baldev Vidyabhushan and his back and forth question answers, which reveal Arjuna's mindset. Over to you, Madan Sundar Prabhu.
Thank you. That was a good prelude and reminder of what exactly is going on right now, and a very good kind of a starting point for us to build up our faith. It's very interesting how people think God means authority, authoritarian. And what Bhagavad Gita is presenting a picture is quite different. In today's world, somehow the word sevak is considered to be a very diminishing word.
Yeah.
And here the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, called as Bhagwan, all through Bhagavad Gita, his entry into the pages of Bhagavad Gita is as sevak, not as Bhagwan. So yeah. That's a pretty interesting entry of Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhuji mentioned very nicely that, you know, Krishna takes pleasure in serving his devotees. So here, our acharyas, they at times bring us to a more clarity of what exactly is going on between, let's say, Arjuna and Krishna right now. So both are sitting on the chariot. And why would Arjuna ask such a thing for Krishna? Over here, let me see those who have come here to fight, this text number 23, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. And here our acharyas gives a very interesting conversation. So Krishna says, Arjuna, but you are a fighter, not a spectator. What will be accomplished by viewing this? Why do you want to see it? No, the conscience have already blown, fight now. So Arjuna replies, means this is not a spoken conversation, but what's going on within the mindset. Arjuna, I wish to see at the beginning of the battle those friends and relatives in whose company I will fight, and those friends and relatives against whom I will fight. Just to remind you, this is a fratricidal war happening between the family members and the friends. For that purpose, Arjuna says, please place my chariot between the two armies. How? Krishna may respond, out of friendship, do you think they will make peace? Arjuna, no, there will be no conciliation between the two sides. I believe that they are intent on fighting. There's no way there could be a peace negotiation now. They're intent on fighting, designed to please the son of Dhritarashtra, who is Durbuddhi. Text number 23 says Durbuddhi, that is unintelligent, ignorant of means for his own survival. Ignorant, why? Because he doesn't know that he's going to die. Even in the face of this war, which does not sober his intelligence. Therefore, my viewing the rival party in war has been justified. And then that conversation goes ahead in text number 24. What did Krishna do when Arjuna asked like that? That'll go ahead here. So here I want to raise a question when this is conversation is going on. We had discussed in the previous episode a little bit at the end of it about Arjuna's compassion. So just wanted to something ask and reflect on that side. Duryodhan is quite revengeful in his nature. Although he's the culprit. You can say Pandavas are the victim. Despite being victims, Arjuna is willing to forgive.
Yeah.
That's a little pretty interesting quality of the nature. We see in today's world, people find it so difficult to forgive. I often do surveys when I interact with the audience. And generally, if I have to ask the audience, remember the most cherishable memory. Oftentimes they scratch their head. And if I have to ask a question, remember the incident which you, for which you, you know, feel that you were really hurt. People immediately recall that, which can indicate that they remember very easily any such incidents where they were hurt. But we tend to forget any of those things which people have done good to us. So is there something that happens to people who take to bhakti? They become much more forgiving, they become much more tolerant. Duryodhan just doesn't believe in Krishna. You know, you can say he's a representative of the modern day atheism. But here Arjuna is taking to God consciousness. Does God consciousness inculcate such divine qualities? Any thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, for sure. In the sense, we have this Bhagavatam words, Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavati Akinchana. Sarver gunai tatra samasate sura. There are certain qualities of the soul which are covered by our material modes. So basically a spirit soul shows qualities while conditioned by material body, which are almost all the time like diametrically opposite of what the soul's qualities are. And so the three modes will be like one of the main threads woven into the fabric of Gita discussion. We'll be using understanding of three modes throughout. So I was just hearing 3-4 days ago that a simple drop of water, if it falls on a pan, iron pan, which is on put on fire, it falls there, extinguished immediately. If it falls on a lotus leaf, oh, it looks so beautiful. It looks like a pearl. Although, albeit for a very short time, if the lotus leaf is agitated by water, it may again fall down. What if that same drop during Swati Nakshatra, if it falls in a clamshell, it develops into a pearl? So the potentiality of just a simple, insignificant drop of water is shown by these three modes, where sattva gun, especially shuddha sattva, can make it grow into a pearl. Rajogun will make it appear very beautiful, although for a small, short amount of time. And in tamogun, it may be completely extinguished. So throughout the Mahabharata, we have these characters who embody that short-term gain over long-term pain, no issues. Why do I have so much of hatred towards those who are devotees of God? I don't know. I just don't like them. And the principle of forgiving. So time and again, it is revealed that forgiveness is always on the foundation of strength and never of weakness. So Yudhishthira as Dharmaraj, he is the great balancer. He is the wisest among the Pandavas. And Arjun is like his younger brother, but always does some forward thinking that if I have to become a king, does it mean at the murder, mass murder of these millions? I don't want it. Later he will say that I don't want anything which is tainted with blood. And here is Duryodhan getting pride in saying, all these millions, they are ready to lay down their lives for me. Look at me, how great I am. So these are very real emblems of human personality. And as usual, our choice is to follow one, whatever our heart takes. But we should know that if we take Arjuna's route, pain, tribulation in the beginning, in the middle, but the end will always be sweet victory, devotion unto Krishna, and final success in life. And if we choose the Duryodhan button, there could be short-term success, medium-term success, valor, chivalry, courage, skills like, as you mentioned, mace fighting, administration. He was an excellent administrator. But a painful, miserable death. That's for sure.
Is it okay if I put this whole thing in this way? We're talking about the spirituality here. We all are born in ignorance. It's more or less like an animal consciousness. We don't think of anything else than eating. As a child, whatever gets in the hand, puts in the mouth. Then what we have in terms of education or the man-made religions, they kind of help us become something on a human level, develop a consciousness on that. But still, we cannot really come into that level of divine consciousness, which is kind of exhibited by Arjuna here. Forgiving is one of the most difficult things. People struggle a lot, and because of that revengeful attitude, people become crazy.
Of course, see, in one sense, people feel that if you are a devotee, then there should be no sense of revenge, there is no sense of retribution, there is no sense of getting even. Now, that's wrong. If there is no sense of punishment for a civic cause, why do we maintain magistrates and the whole justice system? So, attacking a attacker, we'll come across this when we discuss the six kinds of aggressors, that for Jarasandh, Krishna said, no, there is no question of forgiving him, kill him. And he says, I can't, he's protected by so many boons and so much of a extravagant arrangement of phalanxes. Krishna says, don't worry, I'm with you. Perhaps the most confusing part is when Krishna is telling Arjun, this is how Karna is there. He has gotten down from his chariot. Now shoot. He says, no, but I have my reputation. Krishna says, no, this person doesn't deserve a treatment of a proper warrior. Where was this? He's talking of Dharma now. Where was the Dharma when he openly condemned Draupadi? So a person may have, through his own efforts, courage, valor, money, japa, tapa, kriya, as everything, which all come from Krishna. And when Krishna decides enough is enough, nothing can remain between that individual and his due punishment. Yeah, so we saw that, as you rightly said, Arjuna is angry, calling Dhritarashtra's son Duryodhan Durbuddhi, that he has come here to usurp others' property. So this is a cardinal sin according to Vedic culture. It is wrong to encroach upon others' property. Now, who are the others? Like between you and me, you are the other. I should respect your property. But humanity and the energy of all living beings as a whole, vis-a-vis Krishna, everything is Krishna's property. So the Vedic instruction is there. You accept what is given to you. Do not encroach. This will ensure peace. Everything belongs to God. Whatever Krishna gives, take as prasad. I studied a little bit of world history, Marxism. So there was this communist official who came to the village and said, actually, communism is very simple to understand. He says, if you have two houses, he talks to one farmer, won't you give one to your neighbor if he doesn't have one? Says, oh, absolutely. He says, look, these people are actually getting the hang of it. If you have two horses, won't you give one horse to the government so that others can use it? He said, oh, yeah, I would gladly. What if you have two cows? Then would you give one cow to the government again? He said, absolutely not. He said, hey, what happened? I was thinking this man is getting the hang of socialism and Marxism and living together. He said, my dear friend, for two houses you said I can give, horses I can give, and a cow is much more less valuable. Why you say you won't give? He said, because I have two cows. I don't have two horses. I don't have two homes. So what is imaginary, I can easily share. And this is what is the problem, because any man-made situation where you want to inculcate spiritual qualities like sharing, caring, forgiving. So forgiving cannot be learned by just seeing a YouTube video for 7 minutes or going to a therapy session. The foundation has to be why. I need to forgive others so that my sins can be forgiven. It's a give and take thing. And that's how I grow. Forgiveness is good for my growth. Forgiveness is where I let go of people and say, all right, Krishna allowed that to happen in my life. There must be some reason. I'm not going to question. And I'll go ahead with my life plans. So Arjuna is all that, what you just described, that let bygones be bygones. All right. But he's in for a nasty surprise. Duryodhana is not in a mood to give anything at all. So, yeah. So just to summarize, dear friends, what we discussed here in three verses taken at a time, 21, 22, and 23. Arjuna is speaking for the first time, telling Krishna, O infallible one, O Achyuta, just take this chariot between the two armies. I would like to see who has come, with whom I should fight. And I know they've all come to please this evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan. So he was confident of victory because Krishna is there, but also a slight doubt coming in his mind that is it worth it? So now we have Sanjay making a brief interlude and telling Dhritarashtra as to what did Krishna do upon Arjuna's request, which we shall be seeing when we discuss next verse, that is text 24. Anything else, Prabhu?
That's it. I'm looking forward to what Krishna would do now, actually.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.